The PDF on some of the fuller slides, due to resolution issues, this is clipping the bottom line. Basically, this is Super VGA, that's VGA, and what?
Louder.
Oh, louder? Oh, okay, basically, between my laptop's display where everything works and that thing, there's an impedance mismatch. So on some of the slides, the bottom line can get clipped partially. You'll see it when I get to a fuller slide. The PDF is available. Ike has it. It'll be up. So you can go through the slides. Although my personal opinion is most of these, all slides are pretty much useless. But that's just me. Ike, am I loud enough now?
Yeah.
Great. You'll regret this. Okay, let's get this show on the road. Now, you got two ways of doing this. One is I can leave it up here like this. The other way is...
That's actually legible from back here.
Yeah, but you have good eyes. The other way is like this, but as you can see, it's just it's clipped a little. Yeah. I'll just go down. This is not going through the... Right, let me just get to one where it does actually get clipped. See, like down here... Or this one, you can see with the bottom where it says virtual host for like the first 3 points.
Do it that way.
Do it this way or the original?
Go, man, go. That way.
This way?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, this is basically a talk about getting Nagos up and running. It's not a talk about all the wonderful things you can do with Nagos. It's a talk about all of the simple things you can do with Nagos to make your life happy.
Is that how you pronounce it?
Sorry, I pronounce it, but I have crappy diction. And an accent, people tell me, but they're wrong. Okay, so basically what I'm going to be covering is why, where to get it, what it does, and how to do it. I was tempted to put in who, but it would sound too much like an English class. Now, why? Well, basically, it beats being unemployed. You shouldn't use your customers as a canary. All the other sysadmins will make fun of you if you don't do it. Pride in your work also gives you the ability to verify SLAs if you have arrangements with people. So, and pick whatever reasons you want. There are others. You know, and here's where things are located. Basically, it's in the FreeBSD ports, it's in package source, so it basically compiled pretty much anywhere that's Unix-ish. OpenBSD has a port. The website is www.nagos.org. The add-ons is another website called Nagos Exchange, and a third website called Nagos Community, where they're trying to build up a community site. And Nagos is basically Ping. It's Ping on steroids with a lot of GUI added. You know, the GUIs consist of things like CGIs, log files, plugins for things that you can ping. You know, just all the other stuff. But fundamentally, it's Ping. It sends out a thing and it waits for an answer. Whether it's checking a website, an FTP server, whatever. Even if you go into it, get more advanced where you have passive commands coming in. After a while, you set the passive command, and then that'll trigger a command if it doesn't happen. Like, basically, if it's good, it'll generally just keep resetting a timer, and then there's a timer where something will fail if your passive commands go wrong. So, it's basically Ping. You get a timeout, it generates an error. You get a bad response, it generates an error, or it's happy. And you'll get all this for $19.95, plus shipping and handling. That was my joke. But if you want, give me money. I'm happy. All right, next, the main components. You have the Nagos daemon, the web server. That you need a web server that does CGI. Usually that means Apache. The plugins for the specific types of polls you're doing, and a configuration file that you have to write, and knowledge of your network, which you have to come up with somehow, that's it. The other advantage of doing something like this is when you have this, it's also this audit that you do to configure Nagos, is also a really good thing to give to security. Like, here's all the web servers we should have going out through the border router. You know, so this actually, getting this up also gives you a hit list of things that should be allowed, and also a hit list of things that shouldn't be allowed, if you actually do any sort of egress filtering or anything else. Okay, what I have under management. I have about 120 hosts under management. I'm monitoring 158 services. Now that's different types, they're not different, 158 different things, but as far as a service, I check the website or something, I have 158 of them. Okay, 92 of my hosts are ping only. So in all honesty, you take 92 away from 158, that's how many real services I'm managing. Because if it's a ping only host, I have a service that does just pings. Because you shouldn't be using your host for checking pings regularly. And the reason for that is it can block. The way it checks hosts blocks other polls from going on. So host checking from your host object, which will make more sense when I get to it, is bad. It can slow other things. Basically, the interesting things I monitor web servers, database servers, MySQL, Sybase, MSSQL, some web applications by going through the specific link and seeing if I get something. You know, it includes real video, various statistics programs and stuff that should be up, that the application is up. I do MySQL, Sybase, and MSSQL databases, SMTP, POP, SSH, anything with a TCP port. You can also do anything with a UDP that will do a challenge and response, but you have to do some legwork there. Because of the UDP port, you have to give basically a hex-encoded string that you send and a hex-encoded string that you expect back. So you say, hi, I want to send you da-da-da-da, and you want to send me d-d-d-d, and if I get anything else back, or I don't get something back, it's a problem. But you have to do the legwork with Ethereal or something to look at your network, or you have to figure that out for some stuff. Let's see, where are we? Okay. To fetch and build it, BSD, package source, ports, package, Linux, there's RPMs and devs, from the source, it's not that hard yet. You do have to pay attention to a few details if you're doing it manually. You do need to create a user, you do need to create a group, and usually if you're going to do it manually, I recommend you just put it in its own, you know, whatever Nagos tree, and then leave everything alone so it doesn't mess up, say, your ports or your packages tree. You know, if you're going to do something nasty in the corner, put it in the corner, kind of deal. All right, what you need to do is you need a web server, you need Nagos, you need the Nagos plugins. These are the things that do the different kinds of pings, basically. Compile, install, you need, you know. This is a BSD meeting, so we won't go into details here. You have a port. Okay, there are two main areas for the Nagos config. There's the web server, which is one thing you have to configure, and then there's the Nagos daemon, Nagos configuration, which is the other thing. Now, both Nagos and the CGIs use the configuration file you're going to generate. So, but you do need to configure Apache or whatever, and you need to configure this. Now, okay, you'll need to modify the CGI comp for Nagos, and it's basically, if you're going to use the HTTP auth and you're going to say everyone who can log into this thing is good and can have access, for the various things that it says you can have access to, just put asterisks. So, I mean, it just matches everybody. Otherwise, you can use the login names. And basically, you have the HTML bits, the CGI bits, authentication, which is basic auth, and if you feel like it, you can set it on SSL or not. That's forward of the Nagos config. That's in Apache. There, after add user, I think there is another line that'll show up when you actually look at the unclip slides. But basically, this page here, nothing complicated. Basically, setting up a CGI, and this page here, setting up the HTML, and that's it, except for setting up the file 123 with HT password. That's Apache. That's a website. That's easy. Now, okay. Now, advice on configuring Nagos. Start small and keep it simple. What I'd suggest you do is get one host up with a few simple services and walk through the process of getting everything up with that one host. Don't try and get, oh, I have to get 100 hosts up by Tuesday. Get one up, because the configuration file is somewhat involved. It's a fairly, the way I think of it is pretty much it's a fairly complicated network database and with pointers to things and everything. It's not simple. It's not hard, but there's just a lot of details you have to keep track of. You have to understand how the config file works. Okay, note to self, show the PNG now. Okay, hold on. Okay, take off full screen. Come on. It's going to be one of those presentations. Might be trying to see what I'm doing. Okay, now I've got two PNGs to show you, two graphics. Alright, now unfortunately, due to the sizing issues here, we're going to have issues with this. But this is the one I have the link for in the PDF. As you can see, basically, here is the CGI part, HTTP conf, HTX, and I put the HT access stuff right in HT conf. So, but this is that part. Then there's a CGI conf, which interacts with the CGIs in Apache. And then you have the various, this is the Nagos config file. Now also, one other thing to be aware of, you can set your Nagos config file up as one really big file. Don't do it. It's bad. You will not go home for a very long time trying to debug that thing. Okay, and here are the various objects, basically, some of which I use, some of which I don't, as I scroll around like an idiot with a mismanaged monitor. Okay, and this is, you know, as you can see, there's a fair amount of detail you have to, and these things can have lots of attributes. So, get one working, decide on what you want to do, and then basically write some simple shell scripts to do the vast majority of grinding stuff out so that it's done. But the URL for this image is in the slides. How's that? What happened to you? Okay. This is going to be one of those days. Okay. Okay, the other one, which I have to add into the slides, which I found just today is, or actually just looked at, is let's see if that's it. Alright. Okay. There's another image that has to do with the authentication. This is done up. Jeff. Open. Save this page. Now we look. Open file. Let's see if I get lucky. Nagos notification. Okay. This is somewhat simple, but still pretty complicated. Okay. Basically, here's Nagos's authentication thing. Basically, something happens here in a service check. has it had a state change? You know, has it gone from up to down, down to up, reachable to unreachable, unreachable to reachable? Okay. Am I in a notification interval? Some things you may only care about from 9 to 5. And you can configure that on the object. Say this particular service is a Monday to Friday thing, so don't bother me on Saturday, for example. Then it goes to the configuration for flap detection, where it basically checks to see if this thing's going up and down a lot, and see if it should alert on flap detection. Now, here it is. Is it in a scheduled downtime? That means you can schedule Nagos to say, hi, you're going to be breaking the box down, so I don't care that it's down. For example, adding memory. Everything on the box is going to light up like a Christmas tree. Because, well, you turn the box off and you opened it up. So it's not happy. And then you go from there, it goes to flap detection, goes back to flap detection. Okay, hosted service notifications defined. Did you say, what do you want to do? Are we within a time period when we should be sending out alerts? Has a notification already been sent? Did this thing fail 10 minutes ago and we have it on a 30-minute update cycle where it'll send out a message every half an hour? If it failed 10 minutes ago, I don't send it out again, you know, because we're in the window giving the guy time to respond. Is it still not okay from the previous notifications? Yes. In your contract, option passed, yes. Does this guy have, you know, is he going to respond to this? Does he want to be bothered with it personally? The server may alert, but for example, your manager may not want to be alerted after 8 o'clock for things. Okay, your manager may never want to be alerted for things, but, you know, but he may say, I get to sleep at night unless you think it's worth calling me if the pager goes off. The pager wakes you up. That's why I'm the boss. So you can have that set for individual users as well. So for that, are we good? All clear, notifications can be sent. You get here, it can send out an email, it can send out a page, it can send out anything that you can configure in a shell script, basically. If you can do a shell script, Perl script, write C code, whatever, it can configure it. Now let's get back to this.
Yeah,
there we go. Okay, advice on it. Let's see where we're... Okay, note self, that's where we are. You did not see that last bullet. Okay. Now, the other thing I recommend, again, is chunk up the file. Nagos has the ability to do includes. So, make a file for your hosts. Make a file for the services you monitor. If you're going to be doing, like I did when I started, basically everything's ping, make two files. One for things that you're going to monitor by actually doing. I'll say this as a web server, this, and I'll be doing that by hand. But for my basic file for getting everything up, which was originally pinging everything, make a file for that, because then you can write simple shell scripts that do one thing. Like, I have to make 120 of these things, and the only thing that's different is a host name. You know, that's basically a while loop with a list. Now, if I have the whole file in one thing, one big file, and don't use the include files, I can't do that, or at least not easily. And I always run the risk of overwriting the main file where I spent all that time figuring out all the specific details of what's going on for configuring everything. So, you know, just basically chunk it up. There's a feature called object templates, which allow you to do things like say, okay, this is basically what I want it to look like, and then I can derive things from that. But the problem is you can say, this is basically what I want it to look like, but for this section, I want to look like this, and I want to customize it so it looks like this, and then we'll have hosts going off and so on. I generally avoid the feature entirely. If you're going to use it, be careful. Because it can be you can make yourself a very, very complicated thing to try and figure out 2 months later when you want to make a change. And you forgot everything. Yeah. I try to have it where I'll do some stupid shell scripts to get started and then just do it, and I don't necessarily have all of these dependencies and everything that I have to manage in my head. because I don't want to make a change to one thing and have it affect 20 other things that I'm not aware of, because there's no real tools that I'm aware of to manage this thing and give you the hint other than groveling through the file and looking and stuff. So I tend to stay away from that just because it confuses me. It makes fallacy. Now also be aware of the order you need to have your objects defined in. Things have to be defined before they're used. Depending upon how you use things and how you set up your configuration file, where with me, for example, I have my host groups defined before my hosts, because I define membership of the group, say a department or something, in the host entry. So I have to have the group exist before I can do the hosts to group things. The other way to do it is to have the hosts defined before the groups and then keep track of it in the group entry, where you have a list of hosts. It's a matter of taste, but whichever way you do it, the one you use has to be defined before you use it, or you'll get an error when it tries to load the configs. Alright? Read the sample config files. They are full of lots of useful comments. They explain everything. They go into the details, and really going into the details of NAGOS is much longer than this meeting is going to be. These are features I do not use. Escalations. My boss never wants to be bothered unless one of us call him. Host dependencies. We just don't do it, but basically you can define things like if ping fails on this box over here, it's a router. Everything behind that, and I give it a list, and you have to configure it manually, but you can give it a list and say, well, don't alert that you can't get to these things because the router crashed. So it doesn't light up like a Christmas tree. Service dependencies, it's the same thing, basically, where, for example, say you're monitoring 30 virtual hosts on a web server. For some reason, you have to monitor all 30 virtual hosts. You have SLAs or whatever. You can set it to not light up your pager if the web server crashes, because all of these 30 virtual hosts will depend on one that you can also check. So if the web server's down, the virtual host is down here, this one's down, so the others don't alert because, this one's down. So it's a problem. But you don't get buried in alerts. Extended host service definition, that's just some extra information, and it allows you to pretty up some of the CGI maps and stuff, and I just never bothered. As you can see, I really do lack artistic ability. Let's see. Now, the configuration file layout. This is important. There's a master config file, NAGOS, where I have all my global things set up. How to do this, how to do that, where the various files are located, whether it's the NAGOS files that it uses, the config files that I broke out here as include files. That's all in the global file. Those are things you basically don't edit pretty much ever after you get it set up, and it's basically set up by make, config, and install does most of it for you. As far as where things go, it's off of your root. If you're doing it for FreeBSD, it's off user local, etc. It's where you tell config goes, and it goes through and fills in most of that for you. What I have in that order are, this is in the order that they load, is commands. Now commands config, and I have examples of each of the objects as I go farther on through this. Commands config is a configuration file for the commands. These are the NAGOS, basically call it the NAGOS script wrapper for the various plugins, so that you can do something like ping a host, check a web server, check to see if your SSL certificate's going to expire in less than 14 days. Whatever you want. But these are the things that you load in NAGOS where you configure it to, you figure out what it's doing, like how many variables do I pass on the command line, where the executable is located, other things. But that's where that's all set up. Time periods. Okay, that's pretty much Monday to Friday, 9 to 5, 24/7, the usual. Contacts. I have two things in this file. The contacts, which are individual people with cell phones, email addresses, what have you. for sending mail to. And then the contact groups, which are aggregates. Now, Nagos only talks to contact groups. The contact group figures out who to send what. And again, getting back to the ability of individual users to have like blackout periods and stuff, you know, it goes through this, I send it to the contact group, okay, this guy doesn't get paged on the weekends, this guy can get paged all over the place, and it'll figure it out. But you have to have the contacts defined, then you have the contact groups defined. Then I have the host groups, which is basically a group of departments for me. I have my hosts. I have my services. Now, when I first did this, all my services were ping services. You know, I grounded out so we could get something up to check things. Then we'll start, we're still backfilling as far as getting people to give me information like, this is what I need you to monitor on my box. It's like pulling teeth without the drugs. Then I have services that are not ping, which is basically all of the real services, the web service, the FTP servers, Telnet, whatever. And that's how I have my thing set up. And pretty much, as long as you set it up this way, what it'll do is it will compile these files in that order. So if you have problems up here, it'll die up here and you can fix it. And you can stop messing with it and move on to the next file. I found it really helped me get it up and running, because I would have a discrete chunk and it would pass and I would stop. Then it would go on to a different file. And it just helped me get it up the first time when I was figuring it out. And it also makes it easier to automatically generate stuff. Okay, go over here. Okay, time period object. All right. Okay, we have defined time period. And this works pretty standard throughout everything. Where you will define basically the object type. And then you will give it a name, and you will fill in the blanks. Pretty much usually name and alias are given for anything. And then the other stuff is object specific. And basically this ends up in a C structure somewhere. Okay. This object depends on no other objects. Okay. Now a command object is what I was talking about before. This is where Nagos talks to the plugins, the things that actually do the physical check, whether trying to connect to a web server or an Oracle database or what have you. Okay? And you have basically, there we are. Okay, command objects. Basically, again, name, it doesn't have an alias, so it's basically this is check ping. Now, as you can see, although we have various things bracketed in dollar signs, the dollar sign name, dollar sign, is how Nagos defines what you call variable substitution. They call it a macro. Basically, it's going to be pulling. User 1 is a user-defined macro. By convention, user 1 is the location of where all these things are. On my FreeBSD laptop, it's user, local, libexe, Nagos, and then you would have checkping. But that's defined in a resource file, which is different from a configuration file, because it's called a resource file. And it gets checked first before the configuration files, from what I can tell. H is a host address because you're pinging something. You have a host associated with it, and it pulls the host address out of the host object. Okay. Arg1 and Arg2 are basically your thresholds for good and bad. For basically, everything is great, then you have a warning threshold where you lost some of your packets, and you have a failure threshold where if you go below this, this is a hard error. Things are bad. And 5, which is the number of packets to send out. Now you can just as easily add a $3 to this if you wanted to, and edit this and take out the 5 and put the $arg3 in there for the number of packets you wanted to send out. Okay. Now this depends on the resources in resource config, where configurable macros are stored. macros look like user one maps to X, Nagos, Libby, and Z. Yes, X is not X, so, but it's short, and I like short. And that's where the plugins live. Yes? No, no, no. Checkping is the command name in the configuration file. As far as I know, Nagos just doesn't do recursion. The command name is, this is what I'm going to call it when I look at it in the configuration file, when I call it from my services check, for example. This is pretty standard. I didn't even give it. This came with the system.
Second line is just the command line for the...
This is the command line for, basically, this is a shell exe.
They typically all cast
the command
name to actually check this.
Not on mine.
Well, I've seen some of them.
It works either way. Basically, I kind of like having the same name, because that way I can, I hate having to remember that Bob really means Fred. And I hate typing in caps. This is how it came out of the box on my install that I have at work. Admittedly, I'm running 2.6 over there, and things may have changed in 2.9 or 3. That's basically it as far as how to do it, where the things called, and you can see there are some macros that are defined by magic, like hostname, where you don't define, it's just an object property that is handy. And there are others that you define, and then there are the args, which are basically your command line arguments. I'll get into how to pass them farther on. Now we have a contact. This is me. Mark Spitz with the server group. Yes, you can bug me all the time for damn near everything. As you can see, host notification period, 24/7. Service notification, web server goes down, 24/7. A host notification options, down, unreachable, and recover. It goes bad. I can't ping it. I can ping it. The router is down. Bug me. Server notification, the W I forget, but critical, recover, is CNR, unreachable, is you. I have this actually on a slide form where I defined them correctly, so don't take my word for it. Basically, server notification, and then you have the notification command, service notification command, notified by email, where it'll take this notified by email, it'll go through and get me, get my email, send email. Host notification, same thing, notified by email, and it's again, going back to the ping command, it's the same type of format. It's just basically, the ping command was hard enough to get to fit on the slide. Notification ones with the printifs just wouldn't have worked out. But you can look at it, it's the same basic idea. It's a very simple scripting language. Okay, this object depends on time periods. Okay, contact group. This is what actually gets talked to by things like hosts and services. It talks to contact group. Now the contact group can have, various service support is an email list that we maintain for all of our support people, all of our admins, and it goes to everybody's inbox. Alert is the pager. So someone gets to carry the pager. And thank God it's not me this week. Okay, so basically it depends on the contact object. The object, things to know. This one particularly depends on contact object. Now, in general, as I said, object types come after define. That's pretty much a given. The format for the data is key space value. Now the values may have different formats that they let you have or not, but basically it's key space value. When you get into services and hosts, like say for check ping and such, when you're trying to pass parameters, it gets a little more tricky, but again, you're doing command space value. And if you depend on it, it needs to be defined before you use it. So before you write this, everything that this needs to be written and correctly loaded. Okay, host notation, down, unreachable, R for recovered, so when it's back from being down or when the router comes back up. N, no notification sent. That means this is just something that never complains. It just keeps track of it for you. And flapping, that's if it's going down and up. Now, the way this works for a hard state is you can fail and then you can fail again, and you have a particular threshold set with so many failures. This is really broken. Because as you've seen with pings, you don't really want to alert on the first missed ping. Give it a minute. Ping it again. You know, usually it'll come back up. And you don't want to alert and send it down and then an up message on the next poll. So, but flapping is when, for example, in my network, we had a discussion and we do a 10-minute polling interval, 9 failures, it's a hard failure. That's the department policy. I'm not getting into whether I agree with it. It's what was put out. But the thing is you can have something fail 8 times on the 9th time, ping, successfully. Fail 8 times, 9th time, ping. It will never generate a hard failure because you're not getting to those 9 in a row to say this is broke. You know, most places would do it the OpenView way, which would be 3 and 5. Basically, 5-minute polling intervals, 3 failures. That's pretty much what I'm used to do. But flapping is like, say, if you're failing half of your polls. They're not in a row. You know, I got 9 here. On average, I'm failing 5 of them before it'll catch. So I'm not actually ever, and it'll never get to 9 for some reason. I won't get a hard error, but if I see enough of these, you know something? My service sucks. I need to know about it. That's what flapping is. It's configurable whether you want to do that or not or whatever. Or maybe I could just have on a specific link a really bad network and I never want to know about flapping because it's always flapping. Okay, my DSL line and all. Now for service notification options, you have critical. I can't get to it. Flapping. And no notifications again. Recovery, warning, that's like you have a very slow ping. Or you've got 4 out of 5 packets back. It still looks pretty good, but it's just not happy. And U is unknown. It just got into a state that I can't deal with right now, so I'm just going to say this is the catch-all state. If I can't figure out it's one of the first ones, it's an unknown error, and you know, you want to get notified or not, your call. Okay, here's a host group. Basically, simple thing. Host group name, our game. Service support, basically our internal service. The service we use things for like DMS, mailing lists, whatever. But internal service to our group, not customer service. The reason it's called our game is I really can't name things either. Basically, the way I have it set up, it depends on nothing. But getting back to what I said before, depending upon how you set it up, this could depend on the host, on all your host's files. Because you can set it up so that you list the hosts that are in this, in here, or in there. You can put it in the host group. Or you can list the host groups in the hosts, for example. I chose to do it the latter way because it's just easier for me to say, okay, this is the host, where does it go? And it's easier for me to check it off. Other people may have other ideas of how they'd like to set theirs up, but you can do it either way. This is just how I did it. This is a host. This is a very short host definition. But this is a host. Host name, alias, this is XYZ at columbia.edu, and this is its address. As you'll notice, you're defining the IP address. You're not using DNS. You can, but it's recommended against doing so. The host group, all servers. The catch-all group, I don't know what the hell to do with this thing, so at least we'll put it in a group. Max check attempts, 1. Check period, 24/7. Contact group, Unix admin on call. Notification interval, basically re-notify every 2 hours. Notification period, 24/7. Notification options, down, unreachable, recovered, or flapping. Here's the kicker, this is one of my ping hosts. I have a service defined that pings this. As I said before, pinging can cause a blocking action from what I've read and from when I was setting this up. In Nagos, if you're doing it from the host object, so you should break it out. Basically, after services start failing, then the host object will start pinging to see if the host's down. I have the notifications enabled to set to 0. Basically, this thing doesn't ever really do anything. It's a placeholder for a ping service that I have written so that I don't get the blocking, I don't get any of the hit for this because I have a ping service. when I'm just pinging boxes, I have them in a ping service, and the box itself doesn't do any alerting. And you do that by setting notifications enabled to zero. Okay, so here's what it depends on. It depends on the contact group. It depends on the host group. It depends on the time period. Because I have it in a host group, it has alerting defined, and those 24/7s are actually defined in the configuration file for time periods, and I have to say who to contact. Alert is a contact group. Unix servers, or whatever the other one was. Let's see, what was the other one? Unix admin is also a contact group. As I said, notifications enabled is zero. It will not send notifications. Does not use DNS for IP lookup. So your DNS server can be down and everything, this will still work. This is a host only. Your ping checks on and it does a service. Let's get that back up there and that's all. Service object. Okay, define service. Again, this is short. If you look at the documentation, there's a lot of options. Some of them are set in defaults, but there's a lot of options to connect. Now, okay, hostname XXX service, check the HTTP net tracker, which is our web group statistics package, where they want to see that this thing works and is up, and the application itself is up, not just the web server. Okay, check command. Basically, I have something that started out as check HTTP, which came with NAGOS in the commands file. And then I added with port and path, because I had to do it. I had other things also that are running on off ports. I have web servers running on 70, I have web servers running on 88. I don't know why, but they do have them. And they were there when I got there, they're not changing. But basically, this will take the with port and path, is one string, where you would normally have spaces. It has exclamation points. This will get parsed out as, this is a command, the first thing is a command, then we'll say argument one, argument two, and we'll go forth and check the web server that is sitting on port 80 with this URL to see if it gets a response. So if the application has crashed, you will get a error. Internal server, for you'll get something bad. Okay, again, my polling interval, my normal check interval is 10 minutes. My retry check interval is 1 minute. I will retry 9 times. And if all 9 times fail, it's broke. My check period is 24/7. My notification interval is every half an hour. It's broke. You fix. Again and again and again. Notification period, all day, every day. Notification options. Warning. Uncertain, whatever. Unknown. Crashed, recovered. Flapping. Contact group. All. Let everyone know. This is important. And the service group is the web group. That's the web group owns the server. Now, if you have the GUI up and everything, you'll have the ability to look at it by groups and services and such. Now here it is. Okay, basically, it takes a string, no spaces, where arguments are separated by an exclamation point. The first name is a command. All right, this is really annoying. It really is. It must be even worse for you guys. Hopefully, I get seasick. And it's separated by a bang. The first is the name of the command, and the rest are basically arguments in numerical order. And basically, you're not passing Bob, you're passing positional parameter 1, positional parameter 2. It's up to you to make sure that what you think is positional parameter 1 on your little string with exclamation points is actually what you want positional parameter 1 to be in what you have defined in the command file. It doesn't do type matching. Everything's basically a string. So if you get the order wrong, it'll be happy. It'll wake you up. And that's what it does. Okay, now the services are identified by a combination of the service description and the host name. See, right up here, right at the beginning. Host name, service description. These two strings will uniquely identify a service bound to a host. I have a lot of strings with host name and here for service description, ping, because that's what I do on the host. I have a service. Now, when it shows up, it knows that the combination of that is a unique check. I have a host name and a service. Putting those two together, since the host names are all unique, because otherwise it complains and it won't load the file. So as long as I don't have two services called ping on the same host, I'm fine. Now, okay, highlights from Nagos Comp. Okay, this is not a complete description of the Nagos configuration file. These are just some of the things that I found to be more important as I was going through. These are the things I remember as having to be taken care of. You need to create a Nagos user, you need to create a Nagos group. But since this is a BSD meeting, it'll happen by magic when you install. Okay, the CGIs should be thrown to Nagos user, Nagos group, or at least in my install, they are. And check the check external commands needs. I hate it when the spell checker lies to me. Needs to be true for Nagos to listen to the CGIs. The way Nagos talk, the way the CGIs talk to Nagos is actually really kind of fun. It's, anybody here ever watched the old spy movies or prison movies where they communicate with the dead drop? Someone puts a message in the special crack or under the special bench, and then someone else from the Russian consul comes and takes it out and looks at it and, you know, does stuff. Basically, using the group that you've created, Nagos creates a dead drop area where the CGIs write commands completely anonymously into a file. Nagos reads that file and does what it's told to do. I just think that's neat. It's kind of fun. Now, the interesting thing to throw with that is if you wish to write anything to control Nagos, you don't really have to control Nagos. All you have to do is write something that writes to that dead drop, and Nagos will take it. Be perfectly happy with it. Okay, then you need to see, check external commands needs to be true for Nagos, otherwise it won't read the dead drop. Log rotation method. I just usually use monthly. I don't have a really big thing, but I have a fair amount of stuff monitored, and I do a fairly fine-grained amount of logging on it when something fails. Basically, every time it fails, for whatever reason, I want a log message. Whenever there's anything not right, I want a log message. And I don't want to have a down message, then 4 hours, and an up message later. I want to see every failure, because failures change over the course of the day. And I run 222K. And that's not compressed. That's just a flat text file. Yes?
The machines that are being monitoring, how many transactions do they have on?
The machines?
Yeah.
What do you mean, how many times have they told them on? Or
that's what I'm asking, the number.
If everything goes well, 10 minutes divided by 30 days, 10 minutes. So you got 240, 24, 10 minutes, 6. Call it a buck and a half or so a day, if everything's up, 150 poles a day per machine over a 24-hour period, times 30, rough number. If things go better, for me, what was it, about 120, 130, somewhere around there. I got the numbers up. So I don't think I got to the numbers yet, but I do have the numbers in here as far as how many machines. Actually, yeah, I did. They were at the beginning. They're in the PDF. But basically, it's 10 minutes. It does a 10-minute duty cycle. If it's happy, it doesn't bother it again for 10 minutes. So it's not that much traffic. And if it's not happy, it only pounds it for the first failure, and then it'll just keep checking every 10 minutes to see if it's still broken. But it won't constantly be bringing it. So basically, it's once every 10 minutes. Let's see, where we're at. Okay, read the sample config files. They are full of useful comments. Said it before, say it again. If you're going to set this up, this explains it. This is what this file does. Let's see, where are we? Okay, now what? Okay, check your Nagos config and fix. Basically, do a Nagos D or Nagos B with your master config file where you have everything else listed out. And it'll do a basic integrity and system check and say, you know, I can make sense of this, or, you know, this host is screwed up. I found 14 errors. and it'll give you a list of the errors so you can start looking at the files. Start your Nagos. My Nagos runs as the user Nagos. Path the start script. Look at your Nagos website. Hopefully you'll see lots of green. And investigate the plugins. They're usually installed early via XCC. All plugins support the H option, or at least they're supposed to. But all of the ones that come with it do a pretty good job of doing that. So you can actually run the plugins from a shell prompt if you're curious as to what they do. And you do the H, it'll give you the command line, what you need to do, what the options that are supported are, and then you can just experiment with it. Let's see. Okay, now, the end. Thank you. Any questions or comments? How long was I, anyway?
1 hour.
Shit, I was right on time. It's perfectly by accident. Okay. Yes, Ike.
Question. You mentioned all the various packages and ports that the installing can come from. How bad is it? I mean, how hard is it to just compile and think the source?
It's not hard to do. I did that on Solaris box where I'm running it at work on Solaris 10. You're actually using Sun stuff, so it's not even really all that GCC dependent. Using Sun's tools. It's not complicated, but it is somewhat picky about stuff. Like you need to create the users, after you do the install, you need to make sure things are in the right directories, things are, have the right permissions, it's just a little picky about getting stuff right, which is good, all things considered. You need to have the Nagos user, you need to have the Nagos group for things to work out, you need to tell it what it is in the config files. There's one other thing to know that generally you will not have going on this. You can edit the config files on a live system. It's just because when you start Nagos, it reads everything, it parses it, it expands everything out, and it writes a different file and install wherever you tell it to in the master config, usually an installer bar. And that's an expanded thing. And you saw the host thing that I had, which was like this long on the screen. When you go to the expanded one, it fills in all of the defaults and everything else and explicitly says what it is, and it's like that long. For the vast majority of this stuff, for where the files go and everything else, when you start out for the scheduling, you're not smarter than the program. Trust it. It'll work. It did for me. Don't try to get smart. Just get it up, get it running. The defaults are generally a good idea. Any other questions? Yes, sir.
One question. Is it compatible with
Ubuntu? I don't see why not. It works on Debian.
Oh, I was wondering. So
yeah, there's as far as I know, there is a dev for it. Someone packaged it up.
I saw you. You describe the services.
Yep.
And you give it a host name of a service.
Well, the dollar host name thing, or when you do a service, you have to bind the service to a host. And I can't have a web server sitting out in the network.
Can you have definition for the service?
I have a host object defined beforehand. Services are defined as something that resides on a host.
Driving it, you have a bunch of services on different hosts.
Yes.
Exactly the same services.
Okay, I've got a bunch of web servers.
Yeah, you just repeat that block or you...
Well, what I did when I first got this up was I did exactly what I said to do. I got one of them working. I got a host and I got a ping service mm-hmm. working. I did my research. I had one. Then I said, I need that and I need to change that bit and that bit. And I wrote I wrote two crappy shell scripts. Basically, it was cat, cat till end, greater than, yada, yada, to end, da, da, da. Put the thing in, put a dollar sign in for whatever I read in from the while loop that I had driving this thing, and send it to the host file, send it to the services file. If you do the small subfiles where you don't have a lot of things involved, basically have a lot of the same thing. If you're setting it up like, oh, I have to figure out how to ping 300 hosts by before I go home, crappy shell scripts are your friend. You don't have to do anything with Perl or anything, just cat. Get one template working. Okay, this is what a host needs to look like. This is what, basically a ping needs to look like. Everything is pretty much the same. The host, I have two things. I've got the host and the IP. The ping, I've just got one thing that I need from those two things. I've got the host name, which will allow me to key back into the host where everything's set. And I write two shell scripts, each about this long. And Viola, I have 300 hosts, and I have a pretty good shot of getting it done right. And if I do something wrong, there's a typo in there, I just have my crappy shell scripts again, I fix whatever the typo is, and I regenerate. After you have that done and you get to your initial state, what I would recommend is you put all of your config files under version control. Put your configs under version control. Use the version control whenever you make a change. Please, you'll be a much happier person. Because you always do bad things on Friday when you have to catch a train. Yes, sir?
Were you saying that if you set in the host check config file, if you set notifications to zero, it'll do the service checks?
It will never alert on the host. It'll just alert on the service.
Okay, you were saying, though, that setting the host check to ping.
Well, the host check only does one ping on mine.
Right.
If the thing's down, it'll fail in like 10 seconds. Usually for the host checks you do for my host that I have real services on and I'm not ping checking them, it'll do three checks. It'll do the normal ping, wait a minute, ping, a normal right. 1 minute interval. But I do have it set for one just so it'll throw something out and go, but yes.
Right, but you were saying that the host checks block service checks?
Host checks, from what I read in my book and from what I saw at the time I was putting this together, can stall. They basically don't multiplex. But the service checks go in the background. The host check can be a block. I read was a blocking service. It would do a blocking check. It wouldn't fork off. Okay, let me give a little background from what I understand on how Nagos does the checks. Nagos, basically, here's your Nagos daemon. It reads a config file. It's got a thing that does scheduling, and it says, okay, I should check this now. It forks, and then it goes, this guy goes on doing his thing, saying, oh, I should do that now. This guy over here, which is a fork, says, oh, I should be doing this now. And it goes through, and it fires the check off, and then it reports back up to the boss.
Right.
When things go on, and it manages that, and then it dies. Now, if it doesn't report back soon enough, the boss kills it. I know, this is beginning to sound like a Sopranos episode, but that's what it does. Basically, it'll fork it off. This guy has got a time when saying, if he doesn't report back, depending upon what it is, say 30 seconds for some things, a minute for another, it's a problem. So he's no good to me. He sleeps with the fishes, and we go on, and then we do it again. Or he'll report back to me and do the normal process, exit, host server reaps, he dies, but he passes the state information back up to the server. And that's how the processes work. So what my guy does is he just does one ping, and from what I understand, the host-based pings can be blocking. This is what I read in here where the guy advised against doing it. If you're looking for a Nagos book, this is a good one. I like it.
So then if he's advised against doing host-check pings.
Well, the thing is, he's saying he's advising against doing host-check pings as a primary method. If you have a ping server, you're going to be banging it all the time, every 10 minutes, every 5 minutes, and say ping, ping, ping. That can degrade performance. But the thing is, if you're doing Nagos correctly, you're not pinging things. But in all honesty, no one cares if the box is up. They care if the web server or the database is up. I could care less about the box. The people who pay my salary, push comes to shove, if I could get two gerbils and a diet Dr. Pepper to serve web pages up, they're happy.
They care about web pages being served. They don't care about IP connectivity. So here's the thing. So I have a box with a bunch of services. Now, the services start failing, and then when that happens, the service fails, then it goes and checks the ping. It doesn't normally just ping the box from the host.
Saying. So like if you have in the config file all these hosts or whatever, do a check alive, check host alive, or check ping, you could just set that to the check dummy. Could you not?
I could, but here's the thing. If I'm doing it, well, I could. Yeah, that does make sense, but it wasn't the way I did it. But what I wanted was basically when it went live, when I got real service information, I wanted to be able to do the minimal amount of editing necessary. Basically, I turned the alerts on, I set the pings to 3, and it works. And then I have my normal 3 and 5, you know, 3 checks to let me know that there's a host problem. Well, for that out, I wanted to be able to do that quickly without having to remember to really change things. You know, I have to swap out the command, I have to do this. Everything's there ready. When I get service information, it turns into a 3-ping check, and I set the alerting to 1. And I'm happy because, you know, all right, so this, you know, the ping failed, okay, so it throws another packet out, you know. Big deal. Most of the it doesn't really get used much because as long as the services are up, I don't ping the box. As long as the services are up, I don't care. I can assume the box is up. You know, the web server's up, the box it resides on is working, IP connectivity exists. So I don't need to ping it at all. When the web server fails, now I'm at a branch point. Is the box down? Or is the web server down? Because these alerts could get routed to different groups. The web group might get the web server issue. The server group might get, you know, the box is down. Or if I had dependent hosts figured out, the network group might be saying, your router crashed again. You know, it depends. So you would have to set them up for each. But basically, as long as I can get to that service, everything under it, it works. You know, so you don't check often.
A lot of some other people that I know that are also monitoring talk about the problems with trending, and if the issue is because this host, any host check is blocking service checks, that's going to be
I only do host checks when something fails. I honestly don't have a lot of things failing, or I wouldn't be here. I'd be somewhere else cursing at a computer right now. But, you know, things generally work. Now, if I had a lot of things, you know, I'm talking about, you know, basically adding a 0 to the number of servers I was managing or more, I'd be getting into a lot more statistical failures because I just have more boxes and more things that would, I'd have the same rate of failure, I just have much bigger sample space. But with that, what you can do is break things up into different NAGOS installs to keep them manageable and then just aggregate stuff up to a centralized place because I don't do much host checking. The only time I do a host check at all is after a service has failed. And for the, you know, that's really it. Generally, as far as I know, GloomNet, occasionally it might, but it generally doesn't check the host as long as what resides on the host works. If the web server's up, you know, I can assume IP works. So all ping does is check IP. So I don't have to fall back and check that. If the web server goes down, then I have a branching point. You know, and then I have to start checking things out, whether is it the server, the web server, or, you know, if I have things that say is it something the web server depends on, like this box always crashes when the database gets rebooted or something. You know, I've seen weird things like that happen. You know, if I have it configured, I can check for it. If I want to do the work and it's interesting, I can look at it. But basically, this thing doesn't ping thing. Well, it pings, but from the host point of view, it doesn't ping until services start failing. Because then the service is failing, and you know, one good ping, and I'm back in the game. 3 bad pings, and I send a host alert. Yeah. And as far as trending and other stuff, if I get a little skew, if I get some skew in my graphs and everything, these things happen.
I'm generally in the business of good enough. As long as I can keep things up and running and everything, people are happy with me. When I start screaming about how it's not perfect and I have to spend all this time doing this, they start looking at me funny. Admittedly, it's fun being perfect, or at least trying to be. You get to play with all sorts of things, but yeah, at the end of the day, a lot of times that's just not what I'm paid to do. Yes, sir?
Does it interoperate with S&MQ-IBS?
If you wanted to. I believe there is a polling agent, or you could write one in Perl, or I like PCL and Tickle, but, you know, on Scotty. But you could write something that says, check this. You can do that. I think they have one for S&MP if you want to build it that will do disk usage. You know, basically, get this, get the table, give me this column and this column, do some simple math. If it's over my configured amount, send a nasty gram to the system administrator. You can do that because, here, in fact, let me close this. Wait, beautiful. Let me go. Let's try and see. Okay. Ooh, this is good. This one's small. Small is good. Yeah, watch that.
As a sideways type, this is going to be the last question, so we can all get more drinks.
I talk better when I'm drunk. Here are all the checks that came when I loaded Nagos today. Basically, getting back to the thing like check clam AV, whatever. Now, most of these, you can see some are shell scripts, most of these are C code. And as you can see, most of the TCP networking services are actually just a call to check TCP, so it just does a socket connect. The exception is HTTP is different, Oracle's different, but basically most of the things like check UDP goes to TCP, that one I didn't know. SMTP, POP, TCP, SSH, it has to do some basic handshaking on. So it's just not that. But this is what you have in here as far as what comes with it. If you want to see how something works, what you can do is really simple. Go. Check pinged. Now, okay. As you can see, this is a check ping command in DOS that we defined earlier. When you give it a help, it will tell you how to use it, what the options are, warning threshold, critical threshold. If I lose more than one if I lose more than 2 packets out of 5, warning. If I lose more than 4 out of 5, if I lose 4 or 5 of them, or if I lose all of them, critical. Basically number of echoes. Now, this one, the capital L one's new. As far as I know, it wasn't there when I first looked at this 2.6. And basically, you get a basic description of what it is and how to use it. All of the things that come with it generally are pretty good about this. They explain what you need to do to wrap them in a command object. Then you just wrap it in a command object, you use it in a service, and you're good. So, basically, RPC is the same way, if you want to see that one. Again, it's basically, this is how you use me. Now, anything you want to write that will fulfill the protocol that this uses, and Nagos has a document that says that this thing has to behave a certain way, and then Nagos will understand the output. Anything that you write that fulfills that protocol, you can use in Nagos. Anything that already exists that you can wrap with a shell script to make it fulfill that protocol, you can use in Nagos. If there are any other questions, please feel free to see me. Yeah, what is it?
Is it possible to set up a master and backup on your server?
Yes, it is. The way I'm doing that at work right now, it's okay. It's on my list of to-dos. All I'm really going to be doing is setting up another NAGO server that checks the NAGO server and another server in the server room in case we have a network outage.
Yeah, but will the backup take over all the duties of the master and not do them while the master is...
Well, the backup, mine's not so much a backover, it's just an alert because we had an outage where the switch died in the room, so none of the alerts went out. Because, the network went down. Yeah, I know, and it's fun. Yeah, it's like, oh, this is just not working. And then the power went away, so it got even better. So we're going to set up another box in my office, of course, and take it from there. And basically all that thing's going to do is check the NAGOS box and then ping something else in the room. If I can do those two things, network's up, so NAGOS is happy and he can handle the alerts. If I can't do that, then wake everyone up. We have a problem. As far as having a failover box, you could do it, but you would have to do some work to basically have a command and have some kind of, say the host check would do some ugly thing in shell and move files in and restart NAGOS and send it a SIG hub or something. But it's not like I can have configure here and I can have a hot backup over here where it does a heartbeat. Sort of like the way Cisco's failover. You don't get that.
I was thinking more like the master, they could both do the same checks.
Well, yeah.
Only one of them sends out alerts.
No. No, you can have an aggregation server where you have various satellite ones that feed back up to a master with their alerts, with their results, and then the master can alert on it. Or you can have your aggregation servers do all the alerting and everything locally and mailing stuff out, but you could have one centralized server that you look at for your whole network where it gets fed. It depends, but from what I understand, I'm not saying, especially with the 3.0 stuff that's coming out that I have not looked at. It is an alpha, but I haven't looked at it. It might exist now. But from what I know, and this is mostly from a somewhat older version, because when I actually got into this one, I was setting it up. And I've since just had it quietly work. No, not without doing something on yourself, doing something yourself in an ugly shell script. Okay, we're done? We clap.
We're done.